My home will always be an investment that I'm not going to hold back, on, especially if I'm gearing up for the next level of my life.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Carla again, and welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. So today, even though it's not technically a business conversation, today will be a very good conversation because the reason why we're all in business is because of money. Now you can pretend that you want to give jobs and you want to help the community. And you want to make your parents happy, but really it's all about the money. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, if it's all just money, we will all be doing illegal stuff and stuff we're not proud about, but there's different ways we definitely enter into business. But aside from money, but for our topic today, it's going to be about money, and I'm going to be vulnerable here, and I'm going to share some of my best and worst. They're both the best and also the worst money mistakes that I've done and I've realized in my, say, 15 years of business and 30 plus years of experience on planet Earth. So, a little bit background about me and money. I grew up in a poor family in the Philippines, which is a developing country. They would classify Philippines as, a poor country if you want to talk about rich and poor, right? In fact, when I first got to America, it really shocked me that when they described homeless people, that homeless people had cars. Because in the Philippines, only upper middle class people have cars. It's definitely made for people who have money, and we didn't even grow up to that reality. The cars that my dad drove were all company cars, and we bought our first car. I think I was already like in high school, like senior high school or something. And it was very funny because it was even like a special deal with the company. We only paid half, and it was over like 5 years or something. So all, my life before that was just taking public transportation, tricycles. They look like tuk-tuks or something. They're those like motorcycles with they're pulling like some sort of a carriage behind them, and jeepneys, which is like vans or little trucks in the Philippines where you can carry like 10 to 20 people at a time. But even riding taxis, a private car with a driver was kind of a luxurious moment every time I would do that with my mother, but it was also very rare, and it was only because we had no other choice. So, I had a very different experience with money before compared to now that, I have a business, I have some investments, I have some savings, I married a guy who's good with money and has a great career in business as well. So, I'm able to do a lot of things that I could only dream of. But, it definitely took a lot of mistakes to get here. And I think the purpose of this podcast, I just want to share with you some lessons so that you don't make them yourself, or you also kind of hopefully take time to reflect about your opinions on certain things and how they reflect in terms in your life in terms of money investments, because money and investments and where we put our money in is also very emotional, very spiritual. It's money is a very, very delicate topic, but also a huge part of our lives, whether we like it or not, because a lot of things really are moved by money, right? And I think you will also agree with me when I say that a lot of the problems that you have is or can be fixed or helped with money. And one, in fact, one of my favorite quotes about money is, when you have money, an emergency is merely an inconvenience. And that really struck with me. That motivated me a lot in, working or like making my business thrive or prosper more, make more money, basically, because I would never ever want to have an emergency again. In fact, I've experienced so many moments in my life that made me reflect on that statement. For example, we had a flight to Bali a while ago. It was a gift from my husband, and I wanted to make changes on the flight, on the first leg of the flight, because I needed to see some people. I wanted to see some people. I didn't need to see them, but I wanted to see them, and I wanted to spend time with them. And I had to have a, buy a new ticket, and then I learned super late. Literally, I learned an hour or 2 hours before our flight that if you miss the first leg of your flight, then the entire leg would be the entire flight or the entire trip would basically be voided. And so that would mean that it would void all of the trips, all of the flights that my husband booked for us, like basically his gift, and to not have those flights voided, we would have to pay a few hundred dollars. And it definitely shocked me, but it was the rules. I could like argue, but at that point, I'm also aware that I wasn't really in the position to negotiate. So I just paid the money. I think it was $500 or something. And it was so annoying because before in the past, I have missed first legs of my flight with no consequences. I just didn't go on the flight, and it didn't mean that that the rest of my flight was disqualified or voided. And so I just didn't really expect it. But I paid the money and we went on our way. And even though it hurt me a little bit, I also realized that at that moment, it was merely an inconvenience. It was just an annoyance. It wasn't an emergency. I wasn't pushed into a position where I didn't have a choice. I definitely had a choice, but it was just not a very ideal choice. But it didn't hurt me in such a way that, it like dinged my net worth a lot, or it didn't hurt me in such a way that someone had to that I had to offend someone or something. It was just an inconvenience. And so anyway, the reason why I'm sharing that is that one of my biggest inspirations is for you to never ever have a feeling of having an emergency again. And I think that with that comes with being wiser with money and hopefully avoiding these mistakes. So let's start. I'm going to start with a super shallow one and something that a lot of people probably already know, but I would for sure try to avoid buying a brand new car and a brand new phone. So, but hear me out. So, cars are supposed to take you from point A to point B. And I know some of you use your cars heavily in your marketing, but even that is also pretty debatable. How many times do you show like your purple Lamborghini or your Rolls Royce before people are tired of it, right? And so I think that everyone has a preference in cars, and everyone may think that cars are kind of like a trophy or a bucket list thing. And I certainly understand that, but buying a brand new car, for me, in my opinion, doesn't really deliver the value that you pay for, and or you can get the same value and happiness just buying a slightly used car, or even the car that is brand new, but it's been used, say, as a model unit or as a test drive car, which still, only has, I don't know, 3,000 miles or something, right? Even way less. So that would definitely be my tip, because I've done this mistake before. I went to this mall and I saw this car being displayed and I just fell in love with the color. And I was so stupid. I actually magically had my checkbook with me that day. I just had it. I don't know, maybe I was doing like an errand for my business or something, but I had my checkbook and I fell in love with this car's color. And yes, you got it right. I paid the down payment right then and there. And of course, I know that I couldn't just like drive it off the lot, but I definitely made the purchase decision there. And so, right to this day, I'm still super in love with that car. And that car is like 5 years old now, but I love driving it. I just love its look. I love all its safety features. I love the sunroof. I even paid for like a high-end tint that keeps it cool because, in the Philippines, I left it in the Philippines. In the Philippines, it gets pretty hot, especially during summertime. But, I realized that I could have probably bought a slightly used car, the same caliber, or tried to talk to my friends in the bank for repossessed vehicles, which are still fairly new. That would definitely be my move. I would just look for repossessed vehicles and or buy from friends or things like that. So I don't think I'll ever buy a brand new car again, even though the price difference would be 300 300,000 pesos, which is like $6,000, 6 to 15,000 dollars. And that I could use that money to invest in something that grows in value instead of something that not only depreciates in value, but also has a very simple use, which is basically taking me from point A to point B. Now, don't get me wrong, I like nice cars. In fact, when I was in the States and I was there, I was living there, I drove my dream car for sure, which is a Mustang. And made me really happy. It made me, look forward to going to the office and driving it, meeting friends, and even handing the car to the valet. It was just like a great experience to me. And I get that. I get that feeling for sure. But I don't, there's smarter ways to spend that money, in my opinion. And the other thing that I've practiced for a very long time is also never pay for a phone. There's so many plans right now from these mobile carriers that they'll just give you a phone if you just keep the plan, right? And you want to keep your number anyway. So I have never bought a phone for more than 10 years. I just basically wait for the new phone that my plan would come with, and I just keep renewing. And every 2 years, I get a new phone, and that's just it. It's free. So, I don't chase the latest model for phones, even though a lot of my business involves creating content, because I just don't need it. I can create great content with a slightly older phone. And so, yeah, hope that gives you something to think about. My number two money mistake is spending too much time and money on clothes. So, over the years, I've moved to so many homes in different countries and different cities. I think in the past 5 years, I probably moved to almost 10 homes. Let me think. So it was one in QC and then in Vegas and the other place in Vegas. That's three. And then I went back. I went to Mandaluyong. I bought that condo in Mandaluyong, number four. You say in Davao for a bit, five, and then move to Mexico, six, in that place, and move to another place, seven. Seven times. I moved seven times in the past 5 years. So those are literally like seven homes, either purchased or paid a rent, signed a long-term lease. So that's quite a lot, no? It's a lot of movement. But there was a little time I was also living in BGC, so eight times. So one of the things that I always noticed is that every time I would move, is I always have a lot of clothes. And I have reflected on this, like, do I have an identity crisis? Or am I just like kind of trigger happy when it comes to paying for clothes? And I realized that it's just because I seem to not really make an effort to know my style and what's flattering to me. And so these bright colors and everything, I also realized that it gives me decision fatigue every time I try to go out. And so not a long time ago, I just decided to own a lot of clothes in neutrals. So I have a lot of blacks, whites, browns, and navy blue, some shades of blue. And yes, I would buy like a fuchsia thing or a pink thing every once in a while, but it's very, very rare. I just really accessorize right now. And a lot of my clothes are just one color and it's just all neutrals. I've studied what's flattering to me. I've studied my style. I've studied my body type, my body shape, and what colors and cuts look good. And so I just kind of shop based on that. And when I also shop, I now look for really good material, really comfortable material, something that I know I will love for a very long time. So right now, actually in this moment, I'm wearing a skirt that I bought in 2020. And right now it's 2024. So 4 years. And I love this skirt and this top that I'm wearing. You can't see it. It's a podcast. I think I bought this top in 2021. Yes, I remember. It's a Zara top. And 2021, I bought a lot of things at Zara. And so, because it was the time that I knew my style already. So, with this brand new philosophy, it helps me not be more trigger happy with buying clothes. I also buy lately, I've also been buying a lot of athleisure clothes and clothes that are really, really comfy, but you can also wear for workouts or something like that. I also picked up Golf, which is just kind of a whole brand new apparel shopping destination in itself, no? Golf. So I've also tried to stick in the same principle, but I am enjoying buying. I still enjoy the act of buying, but I'm just now smarter. I buy higher quality clothes and better materials. I buy a lot of Lululemon lately, actually. So if anyone's listening and you work for Lululemon, please tell them I am very, very willing to be sponsored. Basically, probably half of my wardrobe now is Lululemon, but I've gone on a Lululemon bender a couple of times. And I really love it. They have such great cuts, great fit, great material, and I love them. I love them as a brand. And so I've made a lot of money mistakes shopping for the wrong kinds of clothes, shopping for too much clothes. And now I'm trying to really be better at it and being more mindful. I think mindfulness is really important, being more intentional in spending your money. So that is also my next point. My money mistake before is that I didn't have any health non-negotiables. And so I had a lot of expenditures that just weren't good for my health. I think some examples of that could just be something as easy as spending money on junk food. And when I shop, I would always put a little bit of junk food on my my basket or something. And other things, not just food, but like activities or even planning flights. Oh, this flight is more expensive, but it's like a crazy time. I know that I'm not going to be getting enough sleep or something like that. So right now, I really prioritize my sleep, and so that's one of my health non-negotiables. So I really put that first, and I use that as kind of a gauge or a compass on where to spend my money. Because there's nothing wrong about, obviously budgeting on a trip. Like, okay, you're going to take a economy class flight instead of a business class flight. Okay, cool. If that's what you can afford, nice. But make sure that you have your other non-negotiables in place, or at least use that as a jumping point. Use that as a consideration. And so little things such as, spending a dollar more for a pack of, say, vegetables that's organic versus non-organic, or the meat, really realizing what that does to your body in terms of your health, food, either it's food, activities, spending on your sleep. That's also one thing I didn't do before. I didn't really care about my sheets or anything, but now because I care about my health, I know where to spend my money on, and I really invest a lot in my health. And I lead with my health non-negotiables whenever I spend money or in my home, in what I put inside my body. And that's not to say that I never eat junk food or anything, but it is a great jumping point. So you can start there. My next point is not investing in the energy of your home. So before, I remember that even though I could afford something more and something better, I just it was just, I don't know, maybe fun that I was spending a little bit, just a teeny amount of money for my home, because I viewed rent as an expense. And yes, rent is an expense, but it is also an investment in your well-being, because home is where your best work comes from. Even if you work at an office, you will always go back to your home. It'll always be your place of peace. It'll always be your place of comfort. And so there's no point in not investing in it. So I remember living in Davao, and I had a two-bedroom apartment in a safe downtown area. We call it Marfori, and it's one of the most coveted addresses in the city because it's just so convenient. It just had like a really nice location, and for some reason, I was able to score a really cheap two-bedroom there with parking. And in no one would believe me that I got that place for what I paid for, but in that apartment, I just remembered I had very, very little daylight because it was a converted kind of a, it was a two-bedroom apartment. It had everything, a kitchen, a bathroom. I even had a dirty kitchen outside, but it was part of a really big house, and it felt like it was just like a converted suite. But it had two bedrooms and a pretty good space for living room and for dining room. And so for me, it was more than enough, it was more than what I needed. But I realized that it didn't have enough daylight. Sometimes there would be like insects. In fact, one time I was screaming at my bathroom because there was like a cockroach. It only happened one time, but I don't know how it got there, but it was just so funny. But when I was dating someone and he saw my place and he was like, "Oh, it's not bad. I mean, this apartment's not bad. It's just a little dark. What are you paying for this place?" And then I told him, and he was like, "Oh, you could do so much more. Like you make so much more money than that. You should move to a better apartment." And then I just laughed, and I'm like, "Did you know this place is such a coveted address and whatever?" And I love that location, and I could go anywhere in such a small amount of time, and it was very safe, blah blah blah. I was defending it, but the more I stayed in nicer hotels, the more I realized that, yeah, my apartment kind of sucks, and it just felt like it was more than enough because I was a single, and it was a two-bedroom downtown apartment. And so after that, I moved to a way better place that cost, I'm not kidding, seven times. So that cost seven times my old place. And it was pretty scary signing the lease for that, but I made it work. In fact, the first 3 months in that apartment, my income tripled. And it was because that place was in a way better area, great daylight, floor-to-ceiling windows. It was in the best business district in the city, very safe. It had a gym, it had everything I needed. It was a luxurious apartment. I think it was the most expensive apartment in town. Plus, it came furnished, came wonderfully and professionally furnished. It was just beautiful. So, I realized from then on that my home will always be an investment that I'm not going to hold back on, especially if I'm gearing up for the next level of my life. I would rather eat oatmeal and ramen and live in a beautiful home because it sets my mind to what I deserve and where I belong. And I think that's really it in terms of like investing in my home. And I love deals. I love finding deals for porcelain, like plates and all that. I love, shopping when it's a sale at Home Depot or something. But I'm not ever gonna, I'm not ever gonna be, be short or scrimp. Is that the correct term? Scrimp on something, be super cheap on something that I put in my home. And so I've always carried that mindset with me, not just in the homes that I live in, but also in the homes that I invest in, because I want to attract people who are like me, who care about their well-being, who care about the work that they produce, who care about how they feel when they're inside a home. And so if you see my Airbnb properties, I'm super proud to say that I've done my best in like really making it nice, making it look good, and investing in interior design. And I have seen how much difference it also makes in terms of the kinds of people that you attract and the money that your property makes. So, all right. Next money mistake is I definitely took a while before I became consistent in investing in boring and sure things. So the mistake here is that for many, many years, even though I did have those safe real estate investments, I also had a lot of wayward, too good to be true investments, which led me to, being scammed, trusting the wrong people, losing money. And the root of all of this really is I was just being greedy or stupid, to be honest, that's the truth. And I refused to be boring, which is investments. The boring investments are the best performing investments, right? All throughout the years. So best performing in terms of giving you peace of mind. Obviously not best performing in terms of the highest return, because that's called gambling. The highest return is a lottery ticket. You spend, what, $2 and you win a million, millions of dollars. So in terms of ROI and how many times you had an ROI, that's definitely the best ROI. But in terms of like being sure and being just certain that it's going to make money no matter how long it takes and you're not doing anything, meaning it's purely investment, it's purely passive. I definitely took a while before I started doing that. I remember I was dating someone in my early 20s and he taught me how to invest in stocks. And I did put some money in stocks at that time. This was a long time ago, probably 13 years ago, 14 years ago. And I did, but I withdrew it so many times. I would put money in and I would withdraw it again because I just wasn't consistent and I just didn't like it. It was pretty boring to me. But as I grow older and when I, when my income started to really grow, I realized that, I need to do this boring shit so that it will just grow and I can focus and I don't have to think about it. And so the earlier that you can put money in boring and sure things, definitely do that. Thankfully, I was able to do that with real estate. And that's only because I had always not been very, very good at saving. So that would be my next money mistake, not saving properly and regularly. So this had been my mistake for a long, long time. And I'm sad about it, but also I learned so many lessons. And it just basically comes from the arrogance of I know how to make money and I'll always know how to make money. And because of that, I haven't really been saving properly for a long time until, say, 2 years ago when I started saving, taking it more seriously, mostly because whenever one of my houses or my condos would mature, I would, or when it's ready to be occupied, I would have to spend a lot of money furnishing it and a lot of money just preparing it, right, for the renter Whether I'm going to do a long-term rent or an Airbnb, it just took time and took money. And so I would always need a huge chunk of money at these times, and I wouldn't have anything to pull from. So in my experience, I borrowed from people, I would pawn some jewelry, or I would, I don't know, sell something really fast under a lot of pressure, because I didn't have savings. And so I realized that that should change. And I started to save properly and I started to save regularly. And with that comes the next mistake that you should avoid, not taking your debts seriously. I have made this mistake before. I used to think that credit cards, free money. Just think about this problem later. But you should remember how banks make their money. How they make their money is from stupid people like that, like me, like me in the past. And so I was definitely, kind of ignoring my debt, would pay the minimum. But, and it's not that I didn't know what the trap is, because in college, I mean, we took up business math, which taught us about interests, compounding interest, how to compute stuff like that, how banks make money, and things in the same subject. And so I know what I was doing, but somehow I just kept brushing it under the rug. And there were also different ways to like borrow money, and I definitely like abused that. I pawned jewelry that I had to just let go because I was just procrastinating on paying. And so, yeah, a lot of money mistakes that around debt. So right now I'm very aggressive in paying off my debt. I don't buy anything that I cannot pay for what it would allow me to pay. So for example, if I buy a very expensive item, say it's worth $10,000, if there is an option for an interest-free credit card agreement that will let me pay it over 6 months, yes, I would take that if it's interest-free. If it's not interest-free, I would try to get the interest lower and call my bank. But I will totally be mindful and think about, what this means for my financial standing. But 99% of the time, I just really pay my credit card bills to zero every month because I've had just a lot of debt in the past. And right now, it's given me kind of like a PTSD. And I think a lot of that confidence when I was kind of just ignoring my debts and there was also a time I just kept getting newer and newer credit cards or something until the banks wouldn't give me new credit cards. But the thing about having debt is when my dad passed away when I was 22, we had a lot of debt, a lot of debt, probably equivalent to $65,000. And I had to pay most of it because my mom was depressed. One of my sisters just finished college. She didn't have a stable job. My other sister was still in school, and I was the one kind of really, really like working. My mom was working too, but I know that she was really depressed and sad. And so I took it upon myself to be the family's breadwinner and support my mom also emotionally, and also just really work hard because I had a lot of opportunity and I was 22. I had a lot of energy. And so in that time, I was able to pay a lot of that debt. Eventually, my mom helped. I had some relatives help also. And I had some people who just forgave my debt, the people that I borrowed money from, my family borrowed money from when my dad got sick. And so maybe the reason why I was ignoring my debt, my credit card debt, because I had this confidence I can always pay down debt, right? $65,000 is a lot of money. And maybe at the back of my head, I was like, well, if I was able to do that, then I can do that again. So I'm just not going to worry about this. But I started watching my credit card statements on the interest line specifically, and it just hurt me that every month they're charging me money for things that I didn't even buy, basically for my debt, right? And I realized, oh my gosh, I'm just being stupid here. I'm just paying more money for something that I bought 6 months ago or last year. And so I just use a different mindset when it comes to debt and credit card debt, and I'm now smarter with debt. I still have debt. I mean, I have mortgages. A mortgage is a debt, but they're, for better purpose and for money making, basically. And if I have credit card debt, I now make sure that I'm going to be able to pay it down to zero on that month. And I've not done that for a very long time. And now it's just a point of pride for me, but also it's, I want to kick myself by, I want to kick myself because I've been stupid for quite a while, right? And so, yeah, anyway, so that is about debt. You know, if you have debt, definitely try to be really aggressive in paying it off. Do your best because not only will that become a financial hurdle, it is actually also a mental hurdle and a mental crutch for you. And whether you like it or not, whether you admit it or not, it's going to affect you. It's going to affect how you move in business. It's going to affect how you sleep at night. It's going to be there hanging at the back of your head, whether you like it or not. And so, okay. And while we're talking about the topic of banks, my other mistake that I want to share you is I realized very, very late that banks are using us more than we're using them, right? So my next one will be, it took me forever to try to get back at banks. If you think about it, you know, you withdraw at another ATM, they charge you money. Some of the swipers where you swipe your card, they charge you money. If you move money to a different bank account, they charge you money. They even hold your money for a few days so they can make more money off of it. They try to get you on a late payment charge for your credit card. They charge you 3% per month compounded. But if you save with them, you'll only get like, what, 1% per year or something. And so, you know, banks have all of these tricks to make money from you. And that's fine. That's their business. That's their business, actually. And the thing is, you should be aware that that's their business and you should try to get back as much as possible. So, you know, in the past few years, I've been smarter with trying to outsmart banks by really matching like payment schedules, earning points through my credit card. I've stayed in so probably over 100 hotels in the world. I've gone on so many trips, dozens of trips, just using credit card points. It has also given me access. Certain credit cards have given me access to certain lounges, co-working spaces, VIP places in bars and hotels, and a lot of exclusive sales, affiliate links. If I share something and I genuinely like it, I get extra money. So also taking advantage of the insurance, the travel insurance that you get, sometimes that's also handy and it comes with your credit card. So there's actually different ways to gain from that relationship with your banks. You just have to study all of them, be smart, and you don't have to do this over and over again. You just have to read it once, understand it, and then find your way around it. So the easiest way to start here is if you haven't done this before, is just get a rewards credit card, a miles credit card, or maybe a credit card that has rewards points that would give you free stays or free flights or free car rentals. That's why I love my Chase Sapphire Rewards because it gives me a lot of flexibility and options where I want to spend my rewards. It also gives me cash back and a lot of opportunities and even the little things like a free Dash Pass for my DoorDash or something. But this is also not a sponsored podcast or a sponsored spot for Chase Sapphire. But if you guys want to sponsor me, you know, put $200 in my account and I'll be happy to mention you again. I'm just gonna buy some Lululemon with it. So, yeah, try to get back at the banks. By the way, I want to share something about savings earlier. When you learn how to save properly and regularly, also research about the best places to save. There are a lot of options now for high yield savings accounts. In fact, one of my savings makes 12, 10 to 14% per year, and it is a legit savings account. It's in a cooperative in the Philippines, and you can look cooperatives up and maybe other similar banking or money or financial institutions. There's also digital banks that offer 5% and more of yearly interest. And I think that's a pretty good deal in terms of passive growth of your money in savings, as long as it's still pretty accessible if you do have an emergency.
And so the next mistake that I want to discuss, and this is kind of about business, is hiring someone just because it's cheap or keeping someone on because, I don't know, they're cheap. So I've had this problem a couple of times actually. And sometimes I would hire someone because their salary expectation is low. And then it's up to me to figure out how it will work out. Or I realize pretty early that it wouldn't work out, but then I just kind of keep them on because I was too scared to spend for the person who actually deserves to be in that position. And over the years, I've realized that that has always made my company grow or move slower, and it has also given me stress. And so I am done with that. I'm only paying for teammates that really deserve to be on my team. And I think that is also a very good gauge or a very good compass of where your money should go in terms of business. So invest in great business partners, invest in great employees and great teammates, and don't hire someone just because they're cheap, or don't keep someone on just because you're scared to pay a higher salary. And like you kind of tell yourself that this is what you can afford for now, but seriously, you can't really afford that much stress. You deserve peace of mind. Remember, stress is one of the top causes of cancer, and you don't want that. Cancer is more expensive. Definitely only invest in teammates that do not give you stress. So, on that note, the next mistake that I want you to avoid is not spending for peace of mind. Now, this concept will manifest many, many times in your life and in the decisions that you make in your business, whether it's like booking a room early or having a reservation at a restaurant or just these little things, maybe paying a little bit of extra for a flight reschedule in case plans change. But not spending for peace of mind, you will always often always and often, should I use those two words at the same time? Anyway, English is not my first language, but that will often lead to a regret, because always remember that investing in peace of mind is always a good investment, and the inconveniences that come with just taking things on a stride or taking a risk and not paying the extra money to just have peace of mind. Sometimes those things cost more money and stress, and you don't want to be in that position. And so now that's my new jam. I'm going to spend on peace of mind. I've incurred a lot of penalties before from not doing that, from just like gambling on things. And this includes the boring business stuff, guys, like bookkeeping, taxes, and things like that. Like always be early on those things instead of, being last minute and not gaining your peace of mind. It probably might not even cost you a lot to do it early. It's just kind of like a mindset thing. So, yeah, always invest in peace of mind. And doing otherwise is definitely a huge regret and a huge money mistake that I don't want you to make. So, if you love this episode, please let me know. Message me on Facebook or Instagram. I hope that you learned a lot. I would love to have a conversation with you guys about this topic. So, if you see this also posted on my social media, feel free to reply. Let's have a conversation. And I'd love to hear what my listeners think about this. There's a lot of investments that we need to make and a lot of regrets that we need to discuss. And I would also love to really learn from you. So follow me on Facebook, that's Carla Singson, or on Instagram, it's Carla Stefan, KarlaStefan. So thank you so much for being here. I hope that you learned a lot, and I hope you're still enjoying this podcast. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next Monday for another episode of None of Your Business. Bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit ProximityOutsourcing.com and check out their solutions.
If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.